Okay, so thank you very much. So my name is Paul Verdu, and I'd like to thank the organizers for giving me this great opportunity to talk to you today. And we're going to switch to a much more recent history and to see also that we still have things to learn from recent history inferred from genetic data. So today I'm going to talk about complex admixture histories of Cabo Verde that we try to reconstruct with approximate Bayesian computation. So let's go into it. The transatlantic slave trade started in the 15th century and lasted for around 400 years until its abolition in the 19th century. And during this era, numerous African population and millions of African individuals were enslaved and forcibly deported through South Africa and to the Americas and Europe. Together with European migrations on either continent, this put into contact previously isolated populations, genetically isolated population, therefore giving birth to enslaved African admixed population. Enslaved African descendant admixed population on both sides of the Atlantic. Okay, but human demographic migrations during this period were not a regular continuous process. There has been major changes with this, and in particular in the mid-17th century, with the expansion of plantation economy mainly in the Americas, but also in some places in Africa, there has been a massive increase of enslavement and deportations of individuals for the following 200 years until a sharp decrease in this forced migration due to the abolition of the task and later the abolition of slavery. And during this period, not only a lot of people were actually displaced, but there has been also major socio-cultural changes in the relationship between enslaved and non-enslaved communities, as well as among newcomers and pre-existing and pre-established settlers. So in this context, there has been like extensive human population genetics work to actually describe genetic diversity patterns in enslaved African descendant populations, mainly through South Americas. The major initial goal was to actually use genetic data to try to reconstruct which population from continental Africa and Europe contributed to the gene pool of these enslaved African descendant populations. And this way, we actually discovered the massive diversity of these admixture patterns in these enslaved African descendant populations, both in terms of where did the genetic pools came from, but also in terms of the intensity of the admixture itself. More recently, with the advances of and development of novel, powerful population genetics methods, some of them actually produced by some people in this room, we got interested in how did these admixture processes actually occurred. When did they occur and with which intensity, how many events occurred in the very recent past in order to build the observed genetic diversity. However, or maybe not however, but this has been extensively done in the Americas and the Caribbean, and to some extent the influence of the task on African populations themselves, on their genetic diversity, has been relatively seldom explored. So this is why I got interested in Cabo Verde. So Cabo Verde is a small archipelago, roughly 500 kilometers from Senegal, from the west coast of West Africa. And it's actually the first European peopling colony in sub-Saharan Africa. The very first one, starting in the 1460s, when the Portuguese crown claimed the archipelago, supposedly uninhabited before that, and they sent migrants to Santiago, this island here in the south in the archipelago, to actually people and settle the place. And right away, these Portuguese settlers bought and enslaved Africans from the nearby Senegambian region and deported them to Santiago to help and, well, to participate in the building of the colony. So not only is the first European peopling colony in sub-Saharan Africa, but it's also the birth of the task itself. Okay? So afterwards, first of all, it took roughly 400 years, 350 years, to actually get permanent settlements on each island of Cabo Verde. So it was not like everyone got people there at the same time. It took a long time to actually people the different islands, mainly due to harsh climates and difficult access to water resources. And most importantly, if we move a bit forward in time, during the 17th century, with the expansion of plantation economy and plantation economy revolution, mainly in the Americas, but again also in Africa. There has been massive deportations of individuals and from many different populations all through South Africa got deported to Cabo Verde, and there has also been free willing migrations from Europe to Cabo Verde. Indeed, during the whole massive part of the task, Cabo Verde served as one of the major platform for the slave trade in between continents. Okay, until the abolition of the task itself, starting roughly at the beginning of the 19th century, and until the abolition of slavery itself in the Portuguese Empire, which is a bit earlier than this date, but you know, it took some more time to actually enforce these abolition of slavery. Okay, so this complex peopling history gave birth to patterns that were previously seen using genetics as being admixed. And actually, even there was indications for, in this previous seminal study, for admixture being diverse across the different islands of Cape Verde. But linguists also have shown that this complex history has produced diversity in the way people spoke Criollo. Cabo Verdean Criollo is the first Criolli language, Atlantic Criolli language. And they identified within this variation traces of signatures, lexical signatures from all over Africa, contributing to the lexical diversity of Criollo language. So both admixture diversity as well as linguistic diversity across Cape Verde. So altogether, I think that Cape Verde can bring us key information about the admixture history between European and African population, the recent one, but since the very beginning of the task, actually even before Columbus, as it started before that. And furthermore, an island model for the peopling history of Cape Verde may echo as well at a microgeographical scale in between islands or even within islands actually, the series of founding effects and task migration that have been experienced by enslaved African descending population at a macrogeographical scale on either sides of the Atlantic. So I set out to address these two very classical questions again for Cape Verde. First, where did Cabo Verde genetic ancestry come from? From the genetic diversity today? And furthermore, what is the admixture history and dynamics underlying this? So to do this, we set out and we conducted six multidisciplinary fieldwork between 2010 and 2018 in order to sample individuals from Cape Verde with two very basic inclusion criteria, is that they would be healthy adults only of Cabo Verdean nationality, and they would self-report speaking Criollo. So we sampled saliva using classical saliva sampling kits, easy to transport. And we conducted for each individual detailed familial anthropology classical questionnaires, classical ethnographic questionnaires, mainly focusing on residence location before and after marriage, birthplace of individuals, of their parents, grandparents, and so on and so forth. A lot of information with respect to life history traits of individuals' mobility within Cape Verde, but also outside. We also gathered linguistic data. I will not talk about linguistics today. Sorry for those who expected that. So ultimately, we gathered 261 individuals that were born at more than 100 different locations across all islands of Cape Verde. And we genotyped them for 2.5 million SNPs in the Illumina Omni 2.5 chip. So merging this data with a 1,000 genome phase 3, the African Genome Variation Project data, as well as Patin et al. Paper, we obtain a rather big sample set that would allow us to compare genetic diversity patterns in Cabo Verde with respect to numerous populations, in particular from Africa, as we were interested in, but also Europe. And we also had in these databases several populations such as Puerto Ricans, Barbadians, as well as Afro-Americans that are also enslaved African admixed descending population for us to have some form of comparison. Okay, so the first thing that we did with all this data is actually calculate very basic allele sharing dissimilarity in between all pairs of individuals in our data set in order to obtain this classical pairwise matrix of dissimilarities across individuals for autosomal data only. that we could then project using multidimensional scaling. The good part in this is that you can remove individuals and reproject the matrix and therefore play with the higher order and axis and explore genetic dissimilarity much more easily than if you just like compute a raw PCA. And mathematically, it's virtually the same in the end. So this is what we can do for one of the subsets. So in red here, you have the African populations, and you can see that the continental European populations are actually on two separate planes. Okay, and in between, you can find the different enslaved African admixed population, descending population that are on intermediate trajectories between these two different planes. So further disentangling this, we can actually see that Cabo Verdeans are on different trajectories from the other population with respect to the continental European and African population. So you can find Cabo Verdeans on this trajectory in between Western Africa, Senegambia, and southwestern Europe in the Iberian, with respect to the Iberian population, while Afro-American and Barbadian populations are at on a trajectory in between East Western Africa on one side and Northern Europe on the other, while Puerto Ricans are, again, a different trajectory in between this part of Western Africa, southwestern Africa, and also the Iberian on the other side. So these different trajectory of genetic dissimilarity between individuals. So we wanted to explore more access, and even if it's easy with the ASD-MDS approach, it still is a lot of access to explore. So we went for a classical structure or admixture analysis in this case, using a slightly broader data set. So as expected in these plots, until k equal 5, you actually recapitulate exactly what we had with the MDS. This is totally expected. They actually capture the same kind of information, where we have the genetic membership patterns in Cabo Verdeans that resemble more the Western African patterns, while Afro-Americans and Barbadians resemble more the East Western African. But the surprise here is that at k equals 6, you start to have separate clusters within Cabo Verde that we couldn't see with the MDSs. And if you jump until k equals 10 here, you can see three different clustering patterns emerging for Cabo Verde, therefore showing actually a substantial amount of genetic differentiation within Cabo Verde. And as you can see here, they do not necessarily correspond to distances across islands, for instance. So still, a complex genetic structure within Cabo Verde can be identified in these analyses. So those are descriptive analyses, they're not formal tests for admixture. Okay, admixture can explain these patterns, but a lot of other things can explain these patterns. So we wanted to formally test, again, in our first question, which population most likely contributed to the haplotypic ancestry of these different islands and different populations. So we conducted a classical local, now classical local ancestry inference approaches using the ChromoPainter, Globetrotter, and SourceFind pipeline. And this is what we get for each island of birth of individuals separately. We first can see that in Cabo Verde, we have a surprisingly small diversity of origins of the populations involved in the genetic makeup of Cabo Verdeans. Indeed, it's like massively, for the African component, it's massively resembling certain West-Western African populations in our data set, not even all of them. It's mainly Mandinka population with a bit of Wolof contribution, Wolof speakers contribution in certain islands. On the European side, it's equally surprisingly reduced diversity of origins of the various populations. It's completely overwhelmed by Iberian shared haplotypic ancestry. And finally, you can also see that you have different levels of admixture across the different islands of Cape Verde at a very microgeographical scale. So this was a surprise because this doesn't echo at all the historical known massive migrations of numerous different populations from all over Africa, actually even contributing to the linguistic landscape of Cabo Verde. So these many migrations from Africa did not seem to translate into equally many sources of admixture for Cabo Verde. And it's the same for the European populations. We also know that numerous European populations migrated to Cabo Verde, especially in the height of the task. But it seems to be massively overwhelmed genetically, only the Iberians seem to have left a footprint. And this is, to some extent, at least for the African side, largely discrepant with what we can see in the Barbadians and Afro-Americans, where indeed you have different regions of Africa substantially contributing to the genome of this population. Okay, so the question is now, how did this admixture occur in across the various populations? So we wanted to go for a highly complex model, as we will see, so we used the machine learning approximate Bayesian computation approach that we recently developed in the software package called Metis. So which models? We first were interested in classic pulse-like models, but with a lot of pulses. So we consider three possible pulses of admixture from either the African or the European source. You randomly draw the time of admixture and the associated intensities. And these pulses can occur synchronically or not. They can occur synchronically with Europe or not. But we were also interested, as I was telling you, there has been a lot of migrations, a lot of recurring migrations. So we wondered if models where you had a recurring admixture process, a period at least of recurring admixture processes, either from Europe or from Africa, as compared to pulse-like models on the other side, would best fit the data. So basically, you randomly draw the onset of the admixture time, you randomly draw the offset and associated intensity, and in between, the recurring admixture process is a numerical solution of a rectangular hyperbola function that is controlled by just a single parameter here that is basically giving you the steepness of these recurring. So it can be constant or linear, or it can be extremely steep and sharp. For the rest of the recurring admixture, therefore looking like basically a pulse of admixture. So you can have a parameter setting that actually makes you this period of admixture looking like a pulse. And finally, well, why not doing this? If it's been like recurring over time, then we might have two recurring periods of admixture either from Africa or Europe independently. And finally, note that we're also interested in effective population size changes and how they influence the admixture process here. So we implemented the possibility for increases in population size over time in the hybrid green populations here. Okay, so how does METIS work? So you design these models, you have prior distribution for each one of the parameters, as I've been saying, so you can use METIS to generate vectors of parameters, values, under each one of the scenarios separately, randomly drawing the values in the priors here. So we do this, and then under for each parameter vector of parameter values, we produce simulations using METIS, and METIS is a forward in time simulator with classic Wright-Fisher random mating, producing genetic data in this population. Therefore, each corresponding to a single vector of parameter values under each one of the scenarios we tested here. Based on this, with METIS, you can calculate a bunch of summary statistics on each of these simulations separately, so that you have a vector of parameter values associated with a vector of summary statistics values. And with this, for each simulation separately, we can then use approximate Bayesian computation. First, a random forest ABC approach in order to identify under which scenarios of the four produces simulation that most often resemble the genetic data. So it's a formal testing, which is often out of reach of numerous maximum likelihood method, because you actually formally test which model under which model do you produce data that most resemble the observed data that are just, you just calculate the same summary statistics for the observed data. And then based on the winning model that you obtain, you can conduct a bit more simulations in order to train a neural network and obtain posterior distribution of all the parameters under this winning model that, again, produce simulations that are closest to your observed data. Okay, so which summary statistics? ABC relies on summary statistics, so which one did we use? We use classical summary statistics such as heterozygosities, some form of inbreeding coefficient, and FSTs, the F3 admix, and we also use the full-blown allele sharing dissimilarity between pairs of individuals as a set of summary statistics. But we had shown theoretically, and we're interested as well in using the distribution of admixture fraction in the hybrid population as a set of summary statistics. We know that it's highly informative. The problem is to calculate this for numerous simulations. I mean, when you have 100,000 simulations, you do not conduct 100,000 admixture analyses between k equal 2 to 10. Okay, so what we did is a simple ASD-MDS-based approach again For each simulation, you just project the admixed individuals on the line joining the two centroids for each source population, and the relative distance of this projection to the centroid is actually an estimate of admixture fraction. It's actually extremely correlated to what you obtain with admixture. So this way, you get the distribution of admixture value for all the individuals in the hybrid population, and we use minimum, maximum, 10% quantize, mode, mean, variance, and higher moments as sets of summary statistics for the ABC inference. Okay, so let's do it. We did at first 10,000 Metis simulations under each one of these models, again, randomly drawing parameters in the priors, and use random forest ABC to actually determine which scenario would best explain our data. And this is the initial results that we get. So for 6 islands out of the 9 that we get people in, it's the first scenario with 3 pulses of admixture from Africa and from Europe that actually win the game, especially in Santiago, where we have a large vote in favor of this first 3 pulses in the scenarios. For Boa Vista and Sal, instead, it's we have a slight winning for the scenario 2 here that involves a recurring period of admixture from Europe and pulses from Africa. And finally, São Vicente, it's the third scenario that wins with a recurring period from Africa and pulses from Europe. So note that sometimes the vote is not that clear because the models are nested. If you remember well, there are numerous models in the parameter space that are actually perfectly mimetic of another. If you have a sharp pulse, if you have a pulse of admixture or a very sharp, steep, recurring period of admixture, these guys are biologically similar, hence the confusion here. So based on the winning model for each island separately, again, we can use more, we did more simulations in order to train a neural network specifically for each island separately in order to obtain this vector of posterior parameter estimation for each one of the parameter models for the winning model. Okay, the tiny black dots here are the prior distribution that were used. And what I want to show you here, I mean, unless some of you guys can actually see the admixture history right away from this, it's pretty tough. But what I just want to show you here is that we have effective population size parameter in green. In orange, red, we have the African admixture history. In blue, we have the European admixture history. And what you can see is that we have numerous parameters that are very sharp, very peaked, very well estimated, with a lot of identifiability. They are substantially departing from their priors. But some other models, some other parameters, for instance, this one or this one here, we have a lot less information. They're barely departing from their priors, so we lack identifiability. So I'm not going to try to tell you that we can estimate everything super well. This is not true, but some things are very identifiable here. So let's project this on the timeline, historical timeline, these exact results for each island separately under the winning model. So we have the onset of the first peopling of Cabo Verde in 1460 and until the generation sample today. Historical information is giving us the red line here, which is the administrative foundation of each island. And also based exclusively on historical information, we have the first census for an island to be over 100 individuals, which after this date, you no longer have less than 100 individuals settled in the island as per census. So you can already see that there may be massive discrepancies between the first perennial peopling of an island and its original administrative foundation. Okay, so let's look at effective population sizes here. When I put the parameters in gray here is that they very little depart from their priors, so we have very few informations to actually estimate them, such as in San Nicolau, but otherwise we do a pretty good job. And what you can see here is that for all islands, the size, reproductive size in the population remains extremely low for most of the Cabo Verdean history until a very sharp increase in the past 3 or 4 generations. Okay, except Santiago, which was the center for the colony, all throughout the history of Cabo Verde, that has a more linear increase in population size. So this actually echoes the census information that we get, where we have a very hard peopling of Cabo Verdean islands, mainly due to drought, famines, and even for certain islands, a very low attractivity of the island for settlers. Okay, so let's do the same thing for the admixture history as well. Here in purple, might not see this super well, I just put the height of the task when massive deportation started, corresponding to this part of the peak of demographic migration, and in green, the period of abolition of slavery. Okay, so at first, what you can see here is that in Santiago, the first pulse of admixture is actually occurring right from the start, very close to the first perennial peopling of the island. This is also the case, for instance, in Santo Anton or in São Nicolau, where either admixture events, either from Africa or Europe, not necessarily super synchronic, but they occur roughly at the same time for this very first perennial peopling. However, in other islands, such as in Fogo, for instance, or in Mayo here, the first admixture events actually occurred before, long before this perennial peopling. So this actually shows, even in Boa Vista, for instance, with the onset of the recurring period of admixture from Europe, that you actually have already admixed people that actually got to settle these islands. Okay, so it's already admixed individuals, probably coming from other islands such as Santiago, that actually went out to settle these different islands. During the height of the task, we have issues here. The different events that we may have indications that exist, we have a very hard time estimating them. It seems that we do not have a whole lot of information in the data to actually accurately estimate these various events of admixture occurring during this period. However, during the abolition of the task, we again have a resurgence of admixture, extremely sharp peaked. From time to time, it's very intense, but it can be also not that intense. And we have a lot of information to actually estimate these events, either from Africa or Europe, that occur in almost all Cabo Verdean islands. And finally, even in the more recent period of time, the 20th century, we have small events of admixture that are extremely precisely identified, even if they are of low intensity, that also occur in some island and that may correspond to labor force migrations. So overall, we have admixture that occurred at the beginning of the peopling of certain islands, and some other islands, it's actually already admixed population that got to settle them in this first 200 years of the task. Then we have very little identifiable signature of substantial admixture during the height of the task, which might also echo the fact that we have such low diversity in the origins of the different populations contributing to the gene pool of Cabo Verde. And then we have a third period of admixture where either European or African events occur on almost every island during the abolition of the task, and the final fourth period during the 20th century. So highly complex admixture histories in the various islands of Cape Verde. Okay, so how can we explain this fact that it's a complete contradiction with the amount of demographic migration that we do not translate into increased events of admixture, or at least even identifiable events of admixture? We have them before, a lot of different events before that we can identify in the data, after, but not during this period. So historians often refer this switch and massive expansion of tasks during plantation economy as a shift of societies with slaves to slave societies, where slave societies would be characterized by increased censuses, but mostly by the onset of extremely strong social cultural discrimination and segregations between enslaved and non-enslaved populations locally that would be absolutely legally enforced and representing a legal barrier to intermarriages, at least. These were also accompanied by a very strong control of slave owners on the reproduction of the slave they owned, and the reproduction between new arrivals and previously established communities. So we can hypothesize that these events, these social cultural changes during the task, actually constrained a lot the possibility for admixture, despite the fact that numerous populations were actually deported during this period. And when it relaxed during the abolition of the task, you also have a relaxation of these constraints that may allow for further admixture to occur. Okay, so we have some perspective and other things that I haven't talked about today that are also in the paper. We have strong indications based on ROHs and actually ancestry-specific ROH distributions, as well as within Cabo Verde distribution, strong signals of isolation by distance at very reduced geographical scale, anchored on birthplaces, actually even within island of birth, a very reduced such structure that may indicate that we have a problem, because there is likely non-random mating processes in Cabo Verde in the various islands, and we didn't consider non-random mating processes in our model. So this is a limit. We will need to work on this, but it's, however, extremely difficult computationally. You have small sensor size population. By definition, they don't have a whole lot of mate choice. So it's going to be tricky to work on this, but we should hopefully do this in the future. And second, sex-specific admixture processes. So previous studies have shown that there was sex-specific admixture processes at play in Cabo Verde, similarly to most enslaved African admixed descending populations. And we have shown theoretically that these might bias the inferences we get from autosomal data only. So we'll need to implement sex-specific admixture models and use information from sex-specific genetic diversity patterns. And with that, I'd like to thank all the participants from Cape Verde over the years that made this study possible, the co-authors for this paper, and in particular, Romain Laurent and Zachary Speech, the first two authors, numerous people that have borne with me talking too much. Thank you for your attention. I will take questions.